And we're gonna do this live. Welcome to Deadpool It Yourself. I am Jake, and with me is Mr. Verano.
How's it going, everybody? Do you think the 5 to maybe 20 people listening? You guys are amazing.
Whoever's there.
Yeah, I know it's not family.
Callback.
Yeah.
It really isn't though. I've told my family not to listen. Save the power.
Yeah, but I do keep telling them to tell their friends that they don't like, please tell them to listen to us and have them waste an hour.
Yeah.
I think it's done well. It's done well.
If they're that terrible, they might like something they hear.
Yeah. Yeah, I got a couple of like, oh my God, you guys are funny. I was like, oh, cool. I know you're talking about my co-host. Not me.
So we're here, in a show that's modeled after DIY. It's not what we're good at, but it's how we make our podcast. And to start off, we like to look at a few topics of the comic book day. And right now, She-Hulk is actively coming out. Have you watched any of it, Mr. Verano?
Yeah, you suck. I've watched it. I like it. There's a little bit that kind of throws me. I don't know if you want me to semi ruin it for you.
Eh,
Okay,
you know I'm gonna binge it.
she pulls a Deadpool.
Oh wait, now I've heard that complaint before, but she does that in the comics too. She was always a
Okay,
character who
I never
famously broke the fourth wall.
All right, well, I never read it, so it does slightly bother me. I don't know, I just don't find it as funny when she does it, but I do like where it's gone so far. That she's
Yeah.
trying to like actually be the lawyer, and like she's really getting pinned into the position of being more of the superhero and
Yeah.
slight moral dilemma. It's been great.
I'm looking forward to it. I do caution anybody who's going to watch it that, like, remember that these things do have target audiences, and She-Hulk's comic was always targeted towards an audience that, didn't have didn't look like me in the sense that it's I mean, they for people, and She-Hulk was always sort of a female power, so they're awesome, but we don't need to criticize just because we might not be the target audience.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't criticize. Like I said, I read a little bit years ago. I didn't read much. I probably knew as much as some people semi know, and that's she's his cousin. She gets powers from him. A little different than I thought, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's fun.
No,
Those
that's the thing.
are hysterical. You'd love the latest episode. It was funny shit.
I'm looking forward to watching it. When the show was first announced, I tried to go back and read some She-Hulk comics, but the problem was I read them right after reading some really good Hulk comics. And it's not the same. It's made she's a different character, and she's unique. She's got a cool character. They have in recent comics made her a little bit more like her cousin in the sense that she has an un she's discovered an uncontrollable rage monster that lives within her, just like he has. But up until then, there was a sort of like Jenna like if Hulk was the tragedy, Jennifer Walters was kind of the comedy. So she was always more lighthearted and aimed at a different audience than the Hulk comics. So I kind of shot myself in the foot in trying to read that because, like, I read this epic Hulk run and then I was like, oh, well, this is lighthearted. This isn't almost like macabre horror.
Yeah, no. I kind of knew that much at least. But I like their if they're giving her more evolution and just the difference between the two. It shows right there she's just well, she's like just a younger Hulk, temperamental, more just wanting to semi gun ho, but he's more understanding of his flaws.
Yeah.
Have you seen Harley Quinn? Because I have not.
I can't remember which season I've seen up to. I know one is currently being released, but you know how I am. I prefer to binge watch than to wait week to week. So I'm waiting. It's the same as what I do with, I know you haven't been listening to, I don't think, but I've been listening to the Marvel Wastelanders podcast.
No, so I haven't.
They saw how popular Old Man Logan was, and they were like, let's run a podcast storyline. They have it's almost like the MPU, you know, the Marvel Podcast Universe, because it's this future storyline where Red Skull masterminded a plan, got all the villains together, and killed all the heroes in various ways. And it's they've shown that they're actually leading towards something now where they started out with, I think it was Old Man Star-Lord, and then they did Old Man Hawkeye, and then it was kind of Old Man Black Widow. And then the most recent one they did was sort of another Old Man, a variant on the Old Man Wolverine theme. Mm. And, now the new one, I think the new episode just dropped the day we're recording. It's a series about, Doom at that time. Because they're all set, 30 years after the day that Red Skull killed the heroes and took over the world, or at least the United States. And I don't know, it's some are good. I kind of didn't really care for the Black Widow one. I stopped listening in the middle, but the Wolverine one was pretty good. Yeah, that was an awkward transition into something I'd actually listen to.
Well, I'll probably try to actually binge as much as I can of Harley Quinn after this episode. So you said two things. We'll talk more about it next episode, most likely. What else were we going to go real quick before? Oh, did you actually watch Sandman?
What?
Did you finally finish watching Sandman?
Oh, yeah, I watched the whole thing.
Finally, God.
I thought we talked about it already, though. I swear we...
You hadn't watched shit.
No, maybe I hadn't watched all of them because I finished them pretty soon after last recording, if that's the case. Okay, well,
after, but not during.
Not before.
What'd you think? I thoroughly enjoyed it, even the extra episode that they gave episode 5, and I thought was interesting to give a light character difference.
So I... I was buying the Sandman trade paperbacks for a while. I think I got 6 out of 10 books, and then I stopped probably because it was around the time that Lincoln was born. I was deciding to pay for subscriptions, but I need to finish that out, and I purposefully have not gone back and read anything because of this show. Because sometimes when I do that, I ruin it, because I didn't do that, I'm really happy I didn't do that. Because yeah, I really like the show. It's really visually interesting. It's got good pacing, and there's a lot of stuff I do remember from the comic in there, you know. So, because Sandman is a Vertigo comic, so it's like the comics that DC makes, they're kind of it was supposed to be the DC's adult line,
so, yeah,
but then they tried to come out with DC Black, I think, and the first one was a Batman where it was just an excuse to show a massive dick shot of Batman. So that fell flat. But it's a Vertigo comic, so it's supposed to be DC adult, but yeah, it was sprawling. I don't know. Have you watched Lucifer?
I have not. I was thinking, because it came up on Netflix, I was like, eh.
So Lucifer and Sandman are both based off of famous comics by Neil Gaiman. And they're connected. The Lucifer in Sandman is the Lucifer in... Lucifer comics. The thing is, and the reason I bring that up is that they definitively will not be crossing over with the Lucifer show, because as you saw, it's gender swapped and someone different. They have a different Mazikeen and everything.
They do.
I mean, I don't know. At first I was kind of disappointed, but because of the difference in tone between the two shows, I actually don't mind it now, because I do think both stand alone on their own. And no, I really like Sandman. I really like their Lucifer. There's a lot of stuff I could say about, like, just the little intricacies, like the Endless are all names that begin with D. It's Desire. It's Delirium. It's Destiny.
They do kind of give their character. And they present their characters fairly well. Death being a bit more humbling than the rest, and Desire really being secretly but conniving, while Despair is just lame, but kind of should be.
I'm looking forward to when they introduce the one they haven't named yet, because Destruction left. Destruction just abandoned his post and was like, fuck this. So they all, like, and I think that changed his name, but I can't remember to what. But that's why they're all when they talk of him, they'll talk about, like, the one who left, or the one who isn't around anymore.
Right. Yeah. No, it makes sense. But it's interesting. I'm really hoping for the season two. It should be great.
Yeah.
Oh,
and then I was going to say, and then the one last topic that we had was that shortly before this recording, that Disney and Marvel revealed the Thunderbolts team, and it's underwhelming.
Well, for you, because you watched it, I'm not, but from what you did tell me before, it doesn't seem that great. So that's fucking Barnes. I got nothing. I got no hopes.
Like, in the comics, the Thunderbolts are a team of supervillains masquerading as heroes for, like, the PR. Like, it's like one of their early leaders is Baron Zemo, and the whole point is, like, they do quote unquote heroic things, but for a little bit of all the wrong reasons, you know? And, like, this Thunderbolts is not real. Like, I guess you could call a lot of them anti-heroes, but no one's really a villain, and only two of them have any kind of, like, in a world of superpowers, only two of them have any kind of power.
Yeah, you're the same.
Unless you count Winter Soldier's metal arm. So the team is Winter Soldier, Yelena Belova as the Black Widow, Red Guardian, U.S. Agent, Taskmaster from Black Widow, and Ghost from Ant-Man and the Wasp. Plus Contessa Valentina, who is, you know, a character in S.H.I.E.L.D. and a lot of the time a spy all over in her own right. So, like, she's not a slouch or anything like that, but it's, like, kind of a team of spies. So it's kind of like, hey, from the world that gave you a bunch of superheroes, here's a Mission Impossible movie.
Yeah. Let's see how that goes. As you're telling me this, I'm like, yeah, I'm not at all feeling upbeat about it.
Here's the I'm bitching now, but here's the thing. You know me. You know that when it comes around, I'm gonna be like, all right, let's all give it the benefit of the doubt and just fucking and watch it and see what it's like.
The most,
huh?
And then you're the one that complains the most.
Oh, come on. I complain about the people complaining most of the time, because I honestly don't think these like, when everybody's talking about how great the Marvel movies were, I was like, are they? Like, it's explosions and shit for people with short attention spans. Are they really that amazing, or, you know, do we just enjoy watching it together?
I mean, they are that amazing because people suck at paying attention.
No, but what I'm saying is, like, you know, there's cinema and there's art and then there's what we like, you know? So
yeah, I know. It's a shame.
But so, like, I know Bolts comes around, even though I'm bitching about it now, going, it's Mission Impossible with superhero characters. When we actually get to it, I'll probably be the one talking, like, let's give it the benefit of the doubt. And then after it all comes on, we're like, yeah, I kind of liked it. So I wish there was a better team, but I'm still probably going to watch. It's still probably going to wind up being like, oh, that was cool, and find something to like about it.
You're going to try really hard. I know that.
Dude, I'm the only person I've talked. I'm the only person I've talked to, because I talk to myself. But anyway,
that's because you try to have a really intelligent conversation, and usually you're the only one you find.
Well, anyway, so
actual programming that we have.
So, like, I'm the only person I've talked to who actually liked the Book of Boba Fett. Like, I thought it was a great homage to westerns, particularly things like Dance of the Wolves in the first part, and
against it at all.
any defense of a town western in the second part, and then, like, so many people just shit all over it, and I'm like, I thought it was fun to watch because it reminded me of a bunch of fun shit from way back when.
I liked it. It was a different story, and it gave a different background to him. I actually appreciated it a lot. People did crap on it, but I was like, oh my God, it was good.
So besides me, you're the second person I talked to like that.
Yeah, and it made him just more humane. Like, come on.
I had fun. I thought it was good.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, I will find something to like about Thunderbolts. I found something to like about Thor. I found, I didn't have to find something to like about Ms. Marvel. That shit was awesome.
I liked it. I thought it was just a great introduction to her. But yeah. So what we were actually trying to talk about is
a read through today.
Wade Wilson.
Well, but that's the thing. This isn't in our Cable and Deadpool comic, we give you the second part of, hey, and Domino's here too.
Oh, she is. You know what? I'll take her over Cyclops, so we're good.
So it's Cable and Deadpool issue 29, The Domino Principle Part 2, The Politics of Fear. We're getting to things I really enjoyed. This was not one of them in this title. Because we're like literally the next two issues are the Civil War tie-in, and I loved the first Civil War. I have strong opinions about the second Civil War. I'm sorry, the first one was an examination of liberty versus security, and the second one was Minority Report with superheroes. So, and it was made to tie into that Captain America movie. Anyway, this is written. Complaining. This is written by Fabian Nicieza. Pencils are by Ron Lim. Inks are by Pat Davidson. Colors are by Gotham. And letters are by VC's Corey Petit.
We open to another edition of the talk show in Deadpool's head. Nightcap with Wade Wilson. He explains the story so far. He was hired to help the resistance movement in a fictional Eastern European country known as Uzbekistan. Must be close to Pakistan. As a fight... As they fought to overthrow their dictator. Oh, that's right, European. This is what I get for not paying attention to super quick. European country known as Uzbekistan, as they fought to overthrow their dictator, the curly haired girl from Falcon and the Winter Soldier.
Thinking Deadpool was going to kill Flag Smasher, Cable's old pair. Oh, huh?
So did I.
Cable, well, yeah, so Cable's old girlfriend Domino took the shot instead. And that's where the story left off, because, you know, she spent the whole time talking about how she didn't trust Cable, and then she was like, holy fuck, he's going to kill that guy. I'll kill him first. Made no sense. Anyway, after the summary, Deadpool introduces his guest, Citizen V, who, much like Prester John, is another character you don't remember, but the comic introduces them as if you should, And the more you see of them, the more you realize they're a third-rate example of a much better character. In this case, he's a shitty male Black Widow in a Captain America wannabe costume.
Oh, that is such a shame. One forgettable conversation later, and we're right back into the arena where Black Smasher was killed. Cable stands in the middle of the chaos, directing the ultimatum guards to lower their weapon, which makes sense because their guns are pointed at the civilians. And the only one in the crosshairs who can survive the experience is good old Deadpool.
Now, Cable is talking out of both sides of his face in this, like, two panels, because he's literally trying to talk to two different people at the same, or two different groups of people at the same time. He's trying to get the ultimatum guards to lower their weapons, while literally at the same time apparently speaking over the loudspeaker, trying to convince the people of Rumekistan that he wants the same things they do. Which, and honestly, that sounds corny as hell, but that's a direct quote. I want the same things you do. Just be peaceful, people. So, yeah. Fucking hippie.
Meanwhile, Domino, who's purple, thought Bubble provided.
You're one down.
Well, I am. I don't know. My bad. As the guards drop their gun, the people cheer, and Deadpool struggles to make his way to Cable, who it is implied is pretty much his exclusive client these days, which begs the question, is he a mercenary or a soldier of Providence? Which coincidentally is kind of the synonym for mercenary, but we're referencing the Cable Nation in this case.
Yeah, because a soldier of Providence, Providence can be a synonym for fortune. So, like, that was Fabian being all clever, being like, haha, is he a soldier of fortune or a soldier of Providence? And it's basically the same fucking thing.
Clever little bastards.
Meanwhile, Domino, whose purple thought bubble provides our narration again in this issue, is watching Cable gain the trust of the audience while thinking about how much she hates how he always gets his way, even though she was the one who did pretty much exactly what he wanted in the last issue by killing the guy whose reign Cable had sent Deadpool to disrupt.
As Domino is thinking about shooting Cable, he is telling the Rumeki people that his very good friend who took the burden of guilt for killing Black Smasher off of his and their shoulders. And she responds by doing exactly what she will do for the most of the issue. Stare blankly and think repetitively about how she does not trust Cable.
Oh, yeah. It's like three quarters of this issue is just Domino narrating and in the background staring at Cable as he does stuff. The next scene is at the negotiating table. Cable stands in the middle leading the discussion. On his right is the Rumeki Resistance movie. The Rumeki Resistance Movement with Weasel and Nenad Petrovic, a resistance leader who showed up seemingly out of nowhere after being disappeared by Flag Smasher's secret police 2 months before in the front of the resistance movement. On Cable's left is the Ultimatum Guard. Domino stands with them, mostly staring and thinking about how she doesn't trust Cable. The way the scene is drawn is somewhat reminiscent of Da Vinci's Last Supper. Last Supper was a comic book thing.
Ah. So it's not the biblical one?
I mean, it's drawn like that. And I mean, it's not immediate, but let's be honest, this title ends, Cable goes on to other things, Deadpool goes on to other things. That means Providence is no longer a nation in Marvel Comics. 20 years down the line. Utopia is. No, it's not Utopia anymore. It's Krakoa. That's right. So, like, yeah. They have a different one, but, like, it does kind of provide a little bit of foreshadowing. Cable's not going to die, but...
Yeah. Well, Deadpool, meanwhile, is watching all of this with his back to the fourth wall. You're the word. He wants someone to do something besides negotiating confidence. So compulsive. As they come to a genetic agreement and break lunch, Cable asks Deadpool to follow Petrovic, mainly because he knows for a fact that Nenad Petrovic had been killed by the Flag Smasher Stalin Guard over 2 months earlier.
So once Petrovic, and I say that with those quote things on my hands, thinks he is alone, He reports into someone named Vradek, saying that his mistake has been rectified. Deadpool confronts him for speaking in an English accent, and Petrovic takes off his holographic disguise to reveal he's Citizen V.
Totally didn't see that coming.
I did, but only because I read the recap page and didn't give a shit about who Citizen V was then either.
Deadpool responds to Via that by giving Citizen V a hearty, who the fuck are you? But he is bored and he wants to fight. So they fight.
Meanwhile, on Providence, Fabian reminds us that Providence exists by having Irene Merriweather and the Black Box discuss who Citizen V is so that we might give half a shit about him. But I still don't.
Just like I don't give a shit about Cyclops.
He's not even in the story, I think.
No, just left the shit on him. You know that already. The only important part of this scene is the foreshadowing of the upcoming Civil War tide initiative. We're back to Cable talking about lofty ideas as Domino stands his stairs and thinks about how much he doesn't trust Cable to lead this country to anywhere other than Ruth. Only this time, he could tell she isn't thinking to him as she stares because they are the only people in the empty room. He gets frustrated and smashes the desk with his metal arm, then leaves for a scheduled press conference.
At the same time, Citizen V is complaining that he and Deadpool do not need to fight because they both wanted the same thing. Cable in charge instead of Flag Smasher. But remember, Deadpool was bored and tired of people making compromises, and so he's looking at this guy going, I don't give a shit if you don't want to fight. You aren't the person you said you were, so I'm going to throw a punch, you jackass.
Typical.
Deadpool kicks him out of the window. Like, it's a really cool scene where the way they draw it is just Citizen V is made out to be this impressive figure, and Deadpool just totally trashes him in this one scene. Although, admittedly, Citizen V doesn't want to fight anyway, but Deadpool kicks him out of the window, smacks the sword out of his hand with a scream of sticks, dodges his kick, and elbows him in the face. At that point, Citizen V just says, we don't need to fight, I'm done, and decides to stop fighting. Deadpool punches him in the face and knocks him out.
Yep.
It was awesome.
Domino's watching Cable on TV, cleaning up the desk he smashed and thinking about how she does Cable. Wow, she really thinks this over and over.
Yeah.
Deadpool catches her by surprise by throwing young Citizen V on top of the desk. She asks Deadpool if he's following Cable because he believes in him. But he walks away while telling her what he thinks doesn't really matter and she needs to figure out where she stands.
Deadpool, like, basically figures, she asks him her question and he's like, who the fuck cares what I think? And that's pretty much all he says. He says it with a lot more words, but that's what he says when he's walking away. He's like, you don't like me. Why the hell would you care what I think about what Nate's doing? You make your own decision. And since she didn't get any answers from Deadpool, Domino wakes up Citizen V to try to get his advice. They trade highbrow buzzword philosophers to let you know that Fabian has read some books. But their conversation essentially boils down to V pretty much agreeing with Domino on being wary about whether Cable is all that better than Flag Smasher, though he thinks of the situation in more hopeful terms than her, in the sense that he thinks, Cable could fuck this all up, but I'm going to hope he doesn't. Meanwhile, Domino's like, Cable could fuck this all up, and I'm pretty sure he's going to. And this is evidenced by Citizen V quoting Aristotle and Domino quoting Nietzsche, because again, Fabian read some books. As he flies off on a sleeker V-shaped version of Green Goblin's glider, he reminds Domino that he is always willing to come back and correct another mistake. To which her thought bubbles respond with the cliche, not if I do first.
Cable and Captain Straka of the Ultimatum Guards walk into the room adjacent to Domino's, in which Deadpool and Weasel, he's back, are eating a two-man Eastern European feast. Deadpool stops eating long enough to Cable he left Citizen V with Domino to tell Cable. He left Citizen V with Domino, but Cable goes to talk to her. He's finally able to speak to Cable, which also immediately pulls out a pistol and points it at him. Oh my God. Even though Captain Straka points his gun at her, much of a standoff as she immediately shoots at Cable. He's protected by his not really telepathic power. Deadpool rushes in, actual three-way standoff between Deadpool, Domino, and Captain Straka. Mexican standoffs.
It's literally like if you imagine Cable as the van behind them, it's literally that three Spider-Man pointing at each other meme.
Yeah.
So Domino shoots the conveniently placed chandelier that is right above Cable, and he uses his gravimetric sheath to block it from hitting him. But since he's pushed, like the way they draw it, since he's put all the all of it underneath that that chandelier, now he's left vulnerable all around him. And so Domino jumps behind him in that unprotected instant and points her gun at the back of Cable's neck. Cable explains to the others in the room that this was a show. Domino wanted them all to know that she could kill Cable anytime she wants. And, you know, basically what she'd done was that first shot was to gauge the extent of how he did the gravimetric sheath or the not really telekinesis, and then to manipulate it the way she wanted. Domino wanted them all to know she could kill Cable anytime she wants, and he realizes in that moment that she doesn't think he will succeed in his efforts. But he admits for his part that this distrust is wrapped in the fact that he has, quote, ruined everything else for as long as she has known him. So he's following a pattern of behavior?
I guess. Having made her decision about what Cable is doing, Domino leaves. Deadpool tries to reassure Cable, but he isn't listening. He picks up the bullet that Domino shot at him and holds it as he stands looking out of the broken window with a single tear in his eye.
And the Domino Principle is over. Yes. Next time we get the first part of Cable and Deadpool's entry in the Civil War. The good one, not the Minority Report one.
Oh, yeah, that's not good. Even that movie is shit.
So, all right. What was your favorite art in this issue?
I would oddly enough say that I find it at the one tier.
Which part?
The one tier, the very end right there. I don't know why. I just find it. I was like, really? One tier? That's it? Just I could see it.
So corny. My favorite art was the fight scenes between Citizen V and Deadpool. I thought those were so well plotted, and they just were drawn so well. You really get a sense for like every step-by-step motion that's going on in this fight, the way they're really just put in there like a really good sequence that's big and splashy and fun to read. What was your favorite part of the story?
It would be the fight.
Yeah, me too.
I think it's just, yeah, it's always a fun part. That and otherwise figuring out what the hell Deadpool's really thinking. But yeah. In this one, more of the fight.
All right, who was your issue MVP?
Yeah, I'm going to have to go with good old Wilson.
We're really agreeing a lot on this one. Yeah, he's mine too. He was just, you know, he was along for the ride. He was following the orders of the people who paid him, and still had the most, the funnest part of the issue to read goes to him. So I agree with you on that one, Deadpool.
Shitty character.
That one's easy. Domino. She was so like frustratingly just there. Didn't do anything, just stared at Cable and constantly thought, I don't trust him, I don't trust him, I don't trust him, I don't trust him. I mean, sure, like Fabian's a good writer, so it's not literally that, but it all boils down to that, and it's just so, she's so annoying this issue.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with it. For me, a little bit is Captain Straka. I feel like he also didn't do much, and he was just stuck in the standoff. Like, what the hell?
I mean, out of everyone in that room, he is the most expendable. He is the most red shirt character in that room. If anyone was going to get hurt or maimed or, God forbid, I mean, in a comic book, no one ever really does, but God forbid, die, it was going to be Captain Straka.
Yeah, he was like, it was my Cyclops. He was just shit.
I got, yeah, I agree. He wasn't that good of for someone who is at the level of captain, he seems to be pretty incompetent.
Yeah, it's like Prester John and it's Rod.
Hey, you leave Prester John stellar Rod, and yes, I'm putting the emphasis on those syllables in that way. You leave his stellar Rod out of this.
I'm just saying, he was expendable as Captain Strong.
There is nothing phallic about his stellar rod.
Really?
It is just a big gold hunk of metal. the fact, like, I don't know what it was about it. I guess they were like, no, we can't be that. We can't be that. I don't know, on the nose with our shit. And they just, every time they draw him now, he's just got that giant red ruby necklace on. But no more mention of the stellar rod.
No, not at all.
So our five takeaways this time are from, this one I think I just picked because I heard a different podcast talk about how they thought it was one of their favorites. Unfortunately, I do not agree. This is five takeaways from Mutant X, which was a 1998 to 2001 title. It spins off of an X-Factor adventure where Havoc gets sort of blasted. And I can't remember if, I don't know, I didn't read the X-Factor lead-ins either. So, but the way it seems in the comic, Havoc got blasted and possibly killed into a what-if universe where a bunch of things happen just differently enough to make the entire place completely different. I think it was meant to be a dark reflection of the 616, but a lot of the darkness didn't exactly make anything darker, just different. So that's what our five takeaways are from this time, is Mutant X. First off, the first takeaway, the dark elements don't really do much to make anything that much darker, but some of them really had the potential to be interesting. And then, I don't know, it seemed like they switched up writers or something, or there was no unified vision. So when they had the potential to make things interesting, they really weren't. So for example, and what they do is they'd reach back into previous storylines. So in one X-Men storyline, Storm is bitten by Dracula, could have become a vampire, but the X-Men, and I believe it was Beast in particular, who develops a serum, helps her to beat Dracula's infection because doesn't fully turn her, and they're able to make her go back to normal. In another storyline, Beast gained the blue-furred animal hide we know from an experiment to fix his appearance gone wrong. But he's like in the 616, he stopped accidentally going too far. So in the Mutant X universe, Storm didn't beat the infection because Beast hadn't stopped experimenting on himself. The Brute, as Henry McCoy is called over there, is the strongest version of Beast there is, but he has the emotional intelligence of an 8-year-old. Ooh. He's also, yeah, he's probably my favorite character out of all of them. He is, in all iterations, he's the most, like, so first he's, you're just sympathetic to him because it's like, oh, that poor guy. But then he does at one point get a lot of his intelligence back, and you have a truncated version of that great run of Red Hood and the Outlaws where Bizarro gets intelligence and then knows that he's losing it and is trying to get it, make sure it doesn't go before he can get something done quickly. Beast has that same thing. Now, he's green, scaly, and cloven hooved, but he, like I said, he's the best. He's also cool as hell. Bloodstorm is a vampire version of Storm, And she has all the powers of both. She has her weather powers. She also has these vampire powers. The potential for interesting interwoven storytelling with just these two characters is limitless. But the series pacing sucks, and later parts of the story contradict earlier issues. So, for example, Brute goes from being intellectually limited from the after effects of his experimentation on himself, which, like, in itself was a great cautionary tale for scientific safety protocols, to having a TBI from an explosion when he was trying to save Iceman from being trapped in his ice form that was caused by the previous versions of Havoc to the protagonist of the story. Another thing is, you know, when I say they had the potential to reveal things, the petty-ass writers didn't even reveal the answer to the only interesting plot thread at the end of the series, because they had, after a Goblin Queen storyline, they had Captain America join the Six, which was Havoc's team of mutants, and they said, yeah, Captain America's a mutant. But then they didn't reveal who he actually was, because they kind of hinted heavily that it wasn't Steve Rogers. But who the fuck was that Captain America? They also passive-aggressively named the second-to-last issue, "You Say You Want a Resolution," implying I wasn't the only one who just wanted it to end by the time it was done. It was so boring.
Sounds like it. The Bloodstorm seemed interesting, so did Brute, but...
No, the characters... Yeah, the characters were interesting. The characters had potential. The stories did nothing for them.
No, not at all.
So my next takeaway is actually one that I need you to think about. I wonder if Verano would have liked the Mutant X version of Cyclops.
Never.
So here's the thing. In the 616, Havoc and Cyclops shared the last parachute when their plane was attacked by the Shi'ar. Their parents are, which if you don't know, is an alien empire that lives out in space. Their parents were abducted by the Shi'ar, and their mother gave birth to their younger brother, Vulcan, before she died. You don't have to know him. He's in different storylines, but I haven't seen him in a while. Last time I saw him was in, I think, the War of Kings, which is where the Inhumans and the Shi'ar and the Kree, a bunch of the cosmic forces go to war with each other. And Vulcan's like the bad guy of that story. Anyway, their father, Christopher Summers, escaped the Shi'ar and became the leader of the space pirates known as the Starjammers. They're pretty much the Guardians of the Galaxy, but for the X-Men side of the universe. So, I mean, yeah. Cyclops bounced around the foster system, at one point living in an orphanage run by Mr. Sinister, until Professor X found him and recruited him for the first version of the X-Men. That's the version of Cyclops that Verano knows and hates. So in the Mutant X universe, Cyclops is more like his dad. He was the one who was abducted by the Shi'ar, and he is the leader of the space pirate crew. And he's a much more loosened up version of the uptight guy that Verano hates with a passion from the 616. Like he just has his father's characterization and Cyclops' face and powers.
No, still hate him. Not
all right, my next takeaway. For a universe where vampires are real, no one in the Mutant X universe knows how to kill one. So in the I don't know. It's so fucking stupid. So in the in the penultimate story of the title, the corpse of the Beyonder that is lying dormant in the Earth's core bonds with the essence of Madeline Pryor and the God, and uses the body of the mutant who took on the mantle of Captain America. Yes, I did not make that up. That is exact. Like, that is essentially the last bad guy of the storyline, is the Beyonder's corpse mixed with Madeline Pryor and this goblin force that is almost like a goblin version of the Phoenix Force, and the mutant who took on the mantle of Captain America is mixed in there. This strange brew of a character follows Dracula around on the promise that the Count will lead it to Alex Summers, who is apparently, you don't find this out until, like, literally the last page of the story. But apparently the reason is because he has bonded with the Nexus of all realities at some point earlier, probably in an annual that I didn't care to read because it would prolong the boring-ass story, and more on that later, because that's my next takeaway. While Dracula is taking his time because he has a connection to Bloodstorm that he could exploit, and he knows she is with Havoc, a shit ton of slightly altered characters attack and Dracula kills all of them. And you know it's Dracula that kills all of them and not the Yonder Corpse smoothie because he keeps making shitty puns about draining the hero's blood. The reason I say that this is proof that no one knows his weaknesses in the Mutant X reality is because he does get killed before the story's conclusion. Bloodstorm stabs him in the fucking heart from behind with a wooden stake. She kills him in the most basic way to kill a vampire.
And no one can figure that out.
It's right. It's Dracula Defense 101, and she gets it done just in time for him to have killed what is implied to be hundreds of superpowered people in a single battle. Also, if he had that fucking connection to her, how the hell was Bloodstorm able to sneak up on Dracula and stab him in the heart? It makes no sense. There's no attempt to make sense. It is, and comic books have their own set of logic, but this is just a clown show of ridiculousness. My next takeaway, number four, is fuck the annuals. Mutant X had annuals, and the annuals tied into the overall storyline. But on the Marvel Unlimited app, they are a different title than the boilerplate Mutant X, meaning that if you want to read them, you have to look for them specifically by their title in order to read them. But by issue 32, 32 issues of this, so that's, 24 is 2 years, so 24 plus 8, that's 2 years and 8 months. For 2 years and 8 months, this comic was coming out, and I can't imagine it did a lot of sales, because it was dull. By issue 32, I was ready to be done with this title. And I am happy to report that I will probably never read this title again. And I think I have already given more than a few reasons as to why. The last storyline of the title even had the setup penultimate battle in the annual. So imagine if you're watching Endgame and Infinity War, but in order to understand what happened in between those two titles, in between those two movies, you had to watch an Ant-Man one shot. It was so annoying. It was just so frustrating. Seriously, if you like comics, save yourself some time with this one, because all of the important parts of Mutant X happen on the Mutant X Wikipedia page. You can read the Wikipedia page, know the story, and save yourself a lot of forcing yourself to read something, because that's how I felt.
Number five.
I know some
fuck is Captain.
Yeah, I know some people like Mutant X. I know that, so if you do like Alex Summers, go ahead and read it. But other than that, let it alone. Number five, as Verano said, who the fuck was Captain America? In the later part of this. Huh?
Was it a black guy?
No.
Dang.
Although that was a huge part of, I want to say, the first Secret Wars was Rhodes. They had an Iron Man, but the Iron Man was Rhodes at the time. And, I think at one point part of his armor gets blasted off, and you see that it's not white Tony Stark, it's black James Rhodes. And he's kind of like, his thought bubble was like, what will they think if they know it was me under here? But that's new, but that's a completely different story that was so much more awesome. But, and they both have to do with the Beyonder, kind of. The Captain America of the Mutant X universe joins Havoc's not the X-Men team, the Six. He's the only survivor of whatever happened with the Avengers when Madeline Pryor as the Goblin Queen tried to take over the world. until they weren't dead anymore, because no one ever really dies in the comics. Literally, they spend the whole time having Captain America be like, I'm so sad to be the only survivor of the Avengers. And then in the last battle, the Avengers show up and they're like, you fucking asshole, you betrayed us. And he's like, I'm sorry, don't fight me. I'm just going to... And it's just ridiculous. It makes no sense. It's stupid. Anyway, at one point, they imply that Captain America was someone who took on the mantle because he was a mutant and not the guy that fought the Nazis in the 40s. Then later, they imply that this captain was experimented on in the 40s, much like Steve Rogers, but he also had a dormant mutant gene, like Bruce Banner in the terrible Eric Bana film. And in the end, all we know is that his body was part of the Beyonder smoothie that became the final boss of the series. So who the fuck was that Captain America? If the answer is anything like the rest of the title the question comes from, then I can comfortably state that I don't honestly care. I'm glad to have the series in the rear view, dear listener. Save yourself the time and read something better.
Yes. Yes.
It's shit. And that's the last thing I'm going to say about Mutant X. I'm sorry to anybody who has read it and liked it. Our opinions are slightly different. You can have your opinion too. I wasn't belittling you for liking it. I was just belittling the comic itself for being crap.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
So anyway.
Like Cyclops?
Yeah. Huh?
Trying to make a cooler Cyclops, just leave it alone.
Yeah, I really liked the Cyclops in Mutant X. He was a cool guy.
I don't. Fun to shit on. Stop making me cool.
And at some point, they were like, "We don't need. Why have just one vampire X-Man when we can have two?" So you know, Gambit joins the team as a vampire, but he's not a vampire when they first meet him, and then he's a vampire later on, and.
Ooh.
That's another thing that happened in a fucking annual that no one wants to read.
Fair enough.
All right, anyway, so if you listen to podcasts, you know that most of the time this is the part where you're directed to go to the page and get all these cool gifts. We don't have that. We don't have a Patreon. We don't want your money. What we want you to do is we want you to spread the word about us. Tell people to listen to us. It'd probably be more effective if you tell the people you think are the most terrible people in your life, because you know, they might actually hear something they like on here, because we're pretty terrible people ourselves.
Please pass the word. We are honestly trying to work on having something by the end of the year. That honestly has probably been our biggest resolution for this year, and we're still working on it. But do please pass the word along.
Yeah, because if they pass the word along and enough people listen, then maybe we'll get to, you know, I think there's a certain level where if you have enough people listening, you can start to try to sell them stuff that they don't want. And yep. I am totally down with trying to sell you things. I'm okay with capitalism. But, you know, we need you to spread the word.
Please do. And we will have another episode coming out soon.
Yeah, we get to read the Civil War tie-ins now from the good Civil War.
Hell so yeah.
Next issue will be fun to read. Thank God. Oh, and I think next time we're doing our 5 takeaways. Based on the announcements that happened a little while ago on the Secret Wars series, the one where Doom is God.
Yes, and it should be good.
Oh, it was. It was awesome.
And I believe coming up soon, just oddly enough, I think Panther comes out before the end of the year.
Yes.
So that should be great.
That'll be interesting.
Hails to the
Yeah, what else? A lot of stuff's coming soon.
I'll remember the rest of the crap. But yeah. We got good stuff.
All right. And good night.